Blog Talk Radio.
When you're down and troubled and you need some love and care and nothing is going right.
So, have you ever felt that nothing is going right? Well, cheer up. From Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the caregiver's caregiver, coming to you live globally from the famous worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. Yes, folks, I'm the guy. I'm the guy who's going to help you and guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Sounds nasty, doesn't it? Well, we have an exciting show planned for you today. Christopher Rausch, founder of the Kick-Ass Guide to Life. That's right, you heard me. And we'll be talking about when you're a caregiver to an undeserving parent or loved one. It's going to be a great show. I've never done a show like this before, so this is a first. I'm your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring, selfless, sacrificial, and are very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. Folks, come on. Learn a lesson from the airlines. Remember, every time you board a plane, you tune them out, and they're there to tell you that if there's an emergency and your oxygen mask falls out of the sky, that you're supposed to put your own oxygen mask on first before you help your child with their mask. Now, I know that sounds like a very selfish thing to ask, but you know, the reason they ask you to do that is because they know you will most likely black out if you don't put your needs above theirs. And then you won't be of any help to anybody. And guess what? Caregivers are the same way. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects that it can have on us. It automatically throws us into this thing called the grief process. And that sounds like another ouch. Unfortunately, folks, the only way out of the grief process is to go through the grief process. And hopefully we can help you through your grief and loss if you feel like you happen to be stuck. Now, if this is the first time tuning in, you can learn more about me and my radio podcast, my books, my videos, by going to my website, davenass.com. That's Dave and then the first four letters of my last name, N like Nancy, A like Apple, S like Sam, davenass.com. Or the name of the show, which is Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver.com, will work also. So, register your visit with me, and guess what? I'm going to send you two really neat gifts. First, a copy of my ebook, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships. And gosh, if that wasn't enough, I'm also going to send you a free report entitled 10 Mistakes That All Caregivers Make That You Shouldn't. Now, don't miss out on these cool freebies worth over $20. All right, enough of that. Welcome to the show, Christopher, and I think I have to unmute you in order for you to talk. There you go. Welcome.
Hey, Dave, how's it going?
Good. I'm so excited you're on the show. This is going to be a different kind of show that we normally have. And sorry you had to listen through all of that first-time show stuff, but, you know, we got to do the intros and stuff. So tell us, Christopher, I can do your introduction, but maybe I'll let you do it first, because this is a laid-back kind of show. You're a laid-back kind of guy, and kick-ass is the only bad word we're going to let you say today. The rest of it's all rated G, so go ahead. Tell us who you are and why you came up with that name.
Awesome, Dave. Well, thanks a lot for having me on your radio show. I really, really appreciate it. This is going to be a fun show because it's going to be a little bit different in the aspect of what I talk about in my life, and I'm really thrilled to be able to share this with your listeners. Well, my name is Christopher Rausch, and my story is a very long and sordid one, but I'll do my best to encapsulate it in the interest of 1 hour being on your show. I was born to a mother with psychiatric disorders and to no father. My biological, I call him a sperm donor, my biological father was a married man with a family of his own, and he decided that he didn't want to have two families, and so he basically deserted my mom. So I got the opportunity, and I say the opportunity, to grow up with her and my half-sister. We have two different fathers. So we grew up in a quaint little city called Inglewood, California, out here in Southern California. It's often referred to as the ghetto. I immediately found out about reverse discrimination when I was a little kid, because it was predominantly white when I was born. And then through the years of being a baby to being about 5 or 6 years old, it became predominantly African-American or black. And I didn't understand what was going on, but I was getting picked on. I was getting beat up, even at a young age. And so in between being left alone in my mom's house with the cockroaches and all sorts of fun stuff, because she was off living her life and not wanting to be a mom, I was outside, you know, playing and being raised by the neighbors and whatnot. And and what was amazing about that is at one point my mom actually admitted herself into a psychiatric hospital because she was afraid she was going to hurt me or she was going to hurt herself. And so I got the opportunity to go stay at her boyfriend's parents' house. And so that was an interesting experience. And I'll try to wrap it all up. It's a hard story to tell fast. But we wound up moving to a nice middle-class neighborhood in Anaheim. It's here in Southern California again. And her said boyfriend came along for the ride. And I actually thought at the age of 6 years old I was going to have a family, that my life was going to be normal. And I started, you know, hanging around kids and going to the first grade and doing all that stuff. But my life was anything but normal with the physical abuse in the house between her boyfriend beating her up and trying to beat me up. But my mom fortunately wouldn't let him. And there was a lot of physical violence with my mom against me, and we had about 20 cats and 4 dogs that I had to take care of. That was my responsibility. And you're going to have so many questions to ask me after I tell you this little story. And this is like a made-for-TV movie.
Yeah, you can't write stuff like this.
No, you really can't. It's quite a story. And so as I got older, I became a lot angrier and a lot defensive, and I started smoking cigarettes and smoking pot at about the age of 10 or 11 years old, because I was looking for an escape. I was getting beat by my mom. My sister deserted me. My mom's boyfriend wound up leaving, and then my mom's cat got sick, and she spent $5,000 trying to save the cat. And I was getting in trouble in junior high because, you know, when I got there, I was about 13 years old, and I was getting into fights and whatnot because all I knew was anger and hostility. And then on the lovely day of May 10th, 1982, I went from being a somewhat middle-class kid living in a neighborhood, going to school, to being a homeless seventh-grade dropout living in the backseat of my mom's station wagon. And if that wasn't bad enough, seeing all of our stuff strewn across the lawn as we drove away to go find our next adventure, she brought along her about 18 cats and her 4 dogs in the station wagon with her. Like I said, psychological disorders. My mom had such a strong tie to animals because animals never abused her and never left her and always loved her, and it stems back to her childhood. And so I'll fast forward the next part. I wound up going back to school later on when I was 17 years old. I got a GED. I said, well, if I can get a GED, I can get an associate's degree. And I went back and I made it all the way through. I got my master's degree in organizational management. I've been at my job now for 21 years. I'm the director of operations. I have been married for 7 years, been together for 12 years, so a beautiful wife and my best friend. I own 2 houses, and I have an awesome wife, and I'm a professional speaker and a coach, and I go back and I help at-risk kids like me realize their true potential in life, and I also help just a lot of people overcome their self-created crap without the self-help fluffy BS. And that's the dollar story in a $5 sentence, I guess.
And that's your story, and you're sticking to it, huh?
I'm sticking to it. It's so hard for me not to go into detail, but that's the mini version as much as I can do it.
Chris, I can't believe everything you just said. I mean, are you exaggerating, or is this factual stuff here?
It's 100% factual, Dave. I could even give you more details.
And so you're not adding drama for effect. This is it.
100% absolutely accurate, without a doubt.
Oh my gosh, man, you should be dead, or in an insane asylum, or like in prison.
I tried to kill myself twice. Yep.
Really?
I tried to kill myself twice. Fortunately, I sucked at it. I was headed probably to prison if I didn't, if there wasn't a point in my life where I made a single decision that changed my life forever. But yeah, I should have been a drug addict. I should have been a gang member. I should have been dead. I should have been all sorts of stuff, but I am not, and I'm happy I'm not.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm sure you have your own theories as to why, but I just want to ask you, you know, during the low point of your life, and it sounds like you had a lot of low points, what were you feeling? I mean, you were feeling worthlessness, you were feeling, you know, depression, you were feeling that this was normal. I mean, guide me through the low points and what got you to the point where you started to realize that this doesn't have to be my normal. If you can kind of navigate me through that and my listeners as well.
Sure. That's a great question. I haven't been asked that question in such a way, so I like that.
Oh, I love to ask questions that nobody has ever asked before. Great.
And I love that. I've been interviewed a bunch of times, and sometimes it's like the same question, but I really love how you phrase that. There were several low points. The one that just struck me that I forgot about up until right now, there was a point where when we were homeless, we were living in and out of motels when we had a little bit of money, you know, depending on what happened, or my grandfather would give my mom money. But there was a time we were collecting cans and newspapers. We'd get out in the morning on our bicycles, and we'd go collect cans and newspapers, and then we would take them to the recycling center, and whatever money we got, usually the hierarchy was cat food, dog food, my mom's cigarettes, beer for her, and then whatever was left, if there was anything, was food. And I'm not even exaggerating, but there was one time where I was so hungry, and I was so frustrated and angry and scared and lonely and tired, and the interesting part of the journey had worn off, and I was trying to get these cans out of a dumpster, and I used to lean over on my stomach, and I would take a coat hanger, and I would get these cans out, and I fell into the dumpster on top of like old icky food.
Oh.
And I started crying. I was probably 13, and I just started crying as I was laying in this dumpster, and I was thinking, what's going to happen? You know, it was such a low point. And there was another point. I mean, there was so many points. One time my favorite dog, because we had the dogs in the car, and we used to have to find a place to park where the animals wouldn't make noise or nobody could hear them. And my favorite dog ran away, and we spent like 10 hours trying to find him, riding our bicycles all over the city of Fullerton. There were times where the cops harassed us. Like I said, there was one time. The other low point that I usually talk about was when I was probably about 16 or 17. We were living in a motel at that point, a very trashy, drug-infested hooker motel. And I had enough. I could not take it anymore. I was like, okay. And I took a bunch of pills. I took a bunch of alcohol. And I got in my friend's car. I actually pretty much stole his car. I asked him to borrow it. And my intent was I was going to find the hardest object I could slam that car into and kill myself. And I got in that car, and I drove like a maniac. I probably drove 70, 80 miles an hour in a circle through probably four or five freeways. And for some reason, my hands would not turn the wheel. I did not want to die, but I could not take it anymore. And I actually made it back to the motel. And there was something in my heart and my mind. And I'm not a very religious person, but I say it's divine intervention, God. Just did not want to see me dead at that point. And the second part of your question is, when did I change? I was sitting on the stairs of that motel, and I was watching the people walking back and forth between the rooms, and I was looking at the drug deals going on, and I was smoking a cigarette, I was smoking pot, I was drinking, I was stealing from liquor stores to eat, and I was working two jobs. I was working at Carl's Jr. by day, and I was working a telemarketing job by night. And then I got fired from the Carl's Jr. job because the lady said my hair was touching my collar, and I was trying to grow my hair out, and she said that was bad, so I got fired. So I wound up getting a job at a telemarketing, doing telemarketing out of a guy's apartment, which sounds creepy, but it wasn't. We were setting roofing appointments. Mm-hmm. And the guy, when we went to work one day, it was a guy that lived in the motel with me. The guy said, I got good news and I got bad news. And he says, I'm going to move the operation to Texas, but because I know you guys are good guys and you're trying to get out of that crappy motel, I'm going to leave my apartment for you with the deposit and everything. Wow. And I was 17 years old, Dave. And I was so excited because my mom actually won the lottery. This is not even a joke either. She won the lottery while we were in that squalor piss hole of a place. And I don't even know where the money went. I think she won $5,000. We could have gotten an apartment. We could have done all sorts of things, but she spent the freaking money. I said freaking. And I went back to the motel and I said, Mom, I got an opportunity to get out of here. You know, I'm becoming a man. I still come and take care of you, but I can do this. I can have a life. I can be normal. I can get out of here before I get shot to death. Cause I almost got shot one time for not buying cigarettes from a black guy. That was another story.
Wow.
I try not to scatter myself. So I sat on those stairs because she yelled at me and she said, "You can't leave me, you." And she called me all sorts of names. And I'm thinking, after 4 years of being on the street, you know, watching her go through being raped, all these different things, and you're going to treat me like that? And I tell people this story because I sat there and I said, if I don't leave this place, I will be dead. And I made that choice, Dave. I said, I'm sorry, Mom. I have to go. I have to put myself first. And of course she called me all sorts of names, but every single night, Dave, I still went back to that motel and helped her take care of her cats, stayed there sometimes so where she could get a job at night. And, you know, I was there for her. But because you got codependency going on, I was being codependent. When I left there, she had to get stronger, and she actually did.
Wow. I'm just, you know, my jaw is open. I just can't believe, when I think I can't be amazed more, you say something and it's like, oh my gosh, you know, it's amazing that you, first of all, had something inside of you, an inner compass, a focus on something above your circumstances, God, you know, whatever you want to call it, that you could pull yourself out of this. Because, I mean, you didn't just pull yourself out of it and get a job at McDonald's. I mean, you've got a master's degree, for gosh sake. And you've got 21 years on the job, and you've found the love of your life, and you're married 7 years, and the list goes on and on and on. And yet, you're not a hard-ass, I just said it, guy that allowed this to damage them and to just, you know, be cold-hearted. You took care of your mom, and we'll get into that part of the story after the break. But you're just kind of a softy, aren't you? When you should really be hard, you know, hard as nails. You've somehow, or God has somehow, protected that soft, vulnerable part of you that is probably still a kid and probably enjoys, you know, being a kid because you didn't have a chance to be a kid. So, you know, you're making up for lost time, I'm thinking.
Yep. Yep.
And which is good because, you know, adults don't enjoy life enough. I telling you before we spoke on the phone that I had just done my Toastmasters speech on, are you living a happy life? And that's one of the things I said, you know, whether you're 8 or 88, you know, maybe you don't know how many days you have left to live, but you can take those remaining days and you can make sure those days are happy days. You know, life gives you lemons, you turn into lemonade. And some people just don't want to have fun. Some people don't want to be nice. Some people are just irredeemable, it seems like. You know, they're just nasty, and they have a bad attitude, and everything's always negative. And it's like, is there positive in there at all? And yet here's somebody like yourself who has a reason to be negative, a reason to be hard, a reason to be all those nasty things. And because we would understand it, you know, if you turn out that way, we'd say, well, look at how he was raised. Of course he's that way.
Sure.
But you know, it's just the opposite. So it's like my wife, you know, she has, she can't speak. She lost her speech in a stroke 19 years ago, and she's paralyzed on her right side. But she doesn't let that stop her from smiling and enjoying life and interacting with people. And it's like, my gosh, if she can do it, you know, what's my excuse? And here we have Christopher Rausch, who should be either dead or a drug addict or a hard, I don't want to say it again, but there's no other word I can think of, a hard-ass SOB, you know, but it's just, you don't fit in the formula. So we're going to explore that a little more. We're going to take a couple-minute break, and I want you to start thinking of of your answer as to why you think emotionally and spiritually you were salvaged from being a nasty person. Because you're really a nice guy. I've listened to some of your interviews. And I'm not alone in my opinion. Everybody seems to like you. I mean, really like you. You have a lot of friends.
Thank you. Yes, I'm very blessed. I'm very blessed. Thanks.
Yes, you are. Okay, so we'll explore that. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Dave Nassani, the caregiver's caregiver, on Blog Talk Radio, where each week we talk about surviving the grief process and avoiding caregiver burnout. We'll be right back.
Life is not just food, sleep, and toothpaste. It's a series of choices, both work and play, practical and impractical. Basketball practice or piano lessons, asparagus, or French fries, and sometimes you have to compromise with sensible shoes, wash and wear, and beige. Life is changing. We're changing too. We think you deserve quality. Whether it's at a table, a desk, a car seat, or the pool, the stuff you need to live and the stuff that makes life worth living. Not just ingredients for meals, ingredients for life. Safeway.
You'll find the legacy of over 100 years of racing behind every Ford we build today. And tomorrow.
Welcome back to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, Avoiding Burnout and Surviving Grief with Dave Nassani on Blog Talk Radio. The whole purpose of this show is to help support you in your caregiving responsibilities so that you don't burn out, because your loved ones are counting on you. Join Dave and his guests now as they resume their discussion.
And we're back with Christopher Rausch, founder of the Kick-Ass Guide to Living Life, or something like that, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Is that right? Yeah, and he has his own radio show. This guy, this is an important guy we're talking to here. He's got so many friends, and you just did a radio interview with some important guy, didn't you? Tell us about that real briefly.
Yeah, it was actually really surprising. I reached out. Actually, I did a free coaching session with a friend of mine on Facebook who I've never met. He was down and out, so I said, well, call me, and I did an hour-and-a-half coaching session with him. Didn't want to charge him anything, just out of the goodness of my heart. And then he felt bad, and he has some people that he knew that he thought would be good on my radio show, so I reached out to him. And then this guy, Dr. Leonard Coldwell, who, if you Google his name, he's got some controversy associated with him, but it's pretty cool because of his statements about cancer. And I have a whole theory about cancer in the medical community. That's a whole other subject. But instead of me having him on my show, he said, well, I want to have you on my show. And I didn't even talk to him. It was all through email. And I thought, okay, this is going to be a quack. This is going to be crazy. He's not, he doesn't know anything about me. I don't know what this hell this is. This is going to be a pitch fest. I was very cynical because I'm still very guarded. And yeah. I was blown away, Dave. I was blown. I don't know if you got a chance to hear it. I got to find out where the replay is. I was blown away at how much this guy knew about me and how complimentary he was about me and how he was saying, I want to co-host a show with you and have you come speak at my, I was blown away. It's amazing. You know, my life is awesome, and our lives are what we make it. It's because I've been going through a period the last 6 months where I've been, you know, kind of stepping back from the limelight. My health I haven't been feeling as great. You know, everything has ebbs and flows, but it was a tremendous interview, and it was just a blessing.
Well, you know, it's funny you should bring that up, because that's what I'm talking about. That is the grace that I think God has shown you, because you could have really turned out to be bad, you know, because it's like, what's a recipe to our prison system, for example. You know, you put someone in prison, and many times they come out worse than when they came out, than they went in. You know, they're not rehabilitated because they just get harder and colder. And someone with a story like you, you know, you turned around. You know, you give so many people hope, Chris, because if you can do it, they can do it.
Oh, yeah.
And you are a success story, and I think that's what he saw in you, that you're not just an average Joe who overcame some obstacles or some difficult situations. You are, I'm reminded of the verse that says, you're more than conqueror, you know, because you did the impossible. And so that's what he saw, that's what I see, that's what a lot of people see, and that's why you're so well-liked. And so if you have a problem with your self-image, get over it, because, you know, they say you should love others as you love yourself. And unfortunately, in the caregiving circles, a lot of people don't even love themselves enough to love others as much as they love themselves. So
yep.
I just want to encourage you that you're an awesome dude, you know.
I appreciate it. You know what, Dave? I surround myself with great people like yourself, and that's not even a joke. I just put myself in the right position to be around the right people.
That's right. We're both part of the same mastermind group, Craig Duswald's Rockstar Mastermind. And those are some of the most amazing people that you would ever want to know in your lifetime. Some of them are very, very famous. Some of them aren't very famous, but they're just awesome, awesome people. And I've heard many, many times, I know you have too, you will become the sum average of the five people you surround yourself with. And I tell my kids that all the time. I tell my grandkids that all the time. Because I'll see, why are you hanging around with that person? Well, you know, and I says, well, do you like that person? Yeah. Do you want to be like that person? No. Well, you hang around that person, you're going to be like that person. And I say, no, that's not true. I said, oh, yes, it is. So anyway, getting back to my question before the break, is that I want you to kind of reflect on why do you think so much grace and mercy has been shown to you by the man upstairs, obviously, because I don't have any other explanation for it, because you are undeserving. I mean, that's what grace means, that you're getting stuff that you don't deserve. And mercy means you're not getting stuff that you do deserve. And you are a recipient of both. And that only comes from God. I'm sorry, because, you know, a lot of you people out there who believe in karma, yeah, karma's cool, and, you know, what you reap, you sow, and all that stuff. But grace is even cooler, you know, because we have been shown a lot of grace by God, and but that's a whole nother story. But tell me why, Chris, you think that all this grace has been bestowed upon you, because you're an amazing person.
Thank you. Thank you, Dave. And I honestly believe that everything happens for a reason. And when I looked at how my mom was throughout the years I was with her, I made a conscious choice not to turn out like her. She used to tell me, do not have kids because you will beat your kids. I was beaten, you know, you were beaten, you know, and I'm like, no, that's not the case. You don't, just because you're born into a situation that's all you know, doesn't mean that's what you become. And so I really made a conscious decision. I'm not going to be like my mom. My mom was a very angry, opinionated, strong as hell, strong woman, but, you know, not very good with people, got fired from every job she had. And when I left that situation, like you were just talking about, the five people you're around the most, when I got around the positive people in my life and I started dating a girl, her name's Tammy, her dad really showed me, because at that point I just thought I was a dirtbag. I had long hair, you know, leather jacket. I was a rock and roller, smoking cigarettes, listening to heavy metal. And I thought I was just going to be a dirtbag. And this guy was like, took me into his home, treated me like I was cool. And I was just blown away. A nice upper middle class family. And I was like, wow, this is pretty neat. You know, I'm not defined by my experiences and by my looks. I'm defined by my soul and what I bring to the table, because there's still that essence. I think there's that essence in everybody, no matter what experience they've been through. I posted this recently on Facebook. I said, do you think that people are inherently good? And overwhelmingly, most people said yeah. And it's the choices that people make and the defensiveness and the seclusion that they put themselves in that makes them that hard, you know what, in life, mm-hmm. because they're so scared of being hurt that they put on the defense mechanism. And for me, Dave, it was one major thing because like I said, when I grew up, I didn't grow up with any religion in the house, and I subscribe to a lot of different philosophies. Like you were talking about karma, you know, I'm mm-hmm. big into the Buddhism and that thing, and also God and Christianity and all sorts of different things. I think if it works for people, that's great. But music was honestly one of the things that got me through it. There's a song, and it's actually tattooed on my arm. This is not a joke. It's Dobie Gray, Drift Away. And it says, one of the lyrics is actually, the chorus is on my arm. It says, give me the beat, boys, to free my soul. I want to get lost in your rock and roll and drift away. And I get chills when I even say that. Music, because I would lose myself in the power of music and the words of the music. And whenever I was, you know, I was hearing my mom getting beat up by her boyfriend when I was a kid, I would go in and I had a phonograph and I had her records and I had an AC/DC record and I had a Kiss record and I had a Rod Stewart record and an Elton John record. And I would put those on and I would just listen to those songs as loud as I could to drown that out. And music just became a part of my being. For a long time, I said music is my religion because everybody knows me. I'm a walking jukebox. And I really think that I wanted to take what I'd been through, especially when I got my GED, because I got my GED because my girlfriend's dad said, hey, why don't you go to school? And I'm like, well, if I want to keep, you know, dating this girl, I better go to school. And I didn't think I could go back. I almost thought I was an idiot. And I made up my GED in about 6 weeks. I took my GED and I was surprised I passed. And then I was like, I started getting confidence. And that's the big thing, Dave. I teach people how to overcome fear and procrastination and build authentic self-confidence that says, hey, no matter what happens, I'm going to survive. No matter what happens, my house could get burned to the ground tomorrow. Would I be upset? Yes. Will I survive? Yes, I will. And then my true passion became in 2008. That's when I really, all my eyes opened up. I went to a funeral and I sat in the back of the church. It was for a coworker who I was friends with. I wasn't super close, but I was friends and I was there paying my respects. And I thought to myself, Dave, what if I died tomorrow, who would show up to my funeral and what would they say? And at that point in my life, I think I was 32, 31. I can't remember exactly how old I was. I'm bad with numbers. And I thought people would say, Chris is a party animal. Chris is a sarcastic joker. You know, Chris is a hard worker. And I went home that day and I sat down and I didn't even know what I was thinking or what I was doing, but I decided to write my eulogy. And I thought, what would I want people to say about me? What would I want them to say? Not what they say right now, but what do I want them to say? I'm thinking with the end in mind, which is one of the practices I do in my coaching. Mm-hmm. And I wrote it out. And you know you're spot on with your eulogy if you read it out loud and you have tears running down your face. And I'm not afraid to say I cry. I look like a badass and everything. But I was surprised because the things I thought were important in my life, Dave, aren't. And at the very end, it said, I will have risked for which that matters. I will have fought for what was right and what was fair. And I will have left the earth a better place for who I was and what I did. And from that moment on, I kid you not, get chilled. From that moment on, I said, that's my purpose and that's my mission in life, is to help other people who don't have the self-confidence, who are living stuck in the past, blaming their parents and their teachers and their governments and their presidents and all that other crap, or the people that are living too much in the future and the what if. My purpose and my mission is for people to embrace their current self and just be as authentic and genuine as they possibly can and not worry about the judgment of what other people say about them.
Wow. You said a mouthful. You know, helping other people is really where it's at. That's, boy, what would this world be like if everybody had your attitude and just helped other people? You know, your friend needed coaching. He couldn't afford it. You did it free. Why? Well, because he needed it. You know, and everyone should be contributing to society. Everyone should be contributing to their fellow man. I mean, did anybody give you something free when you couldn't afford it? You know?
Sure.
Yeah. So God bless you for doing that, because a lot of people talk about doing it, but you're actually doing it. Was your mother ever to a point where she kind of realized how special you were and maybe actually verbalized to you how proud she was that you turned out the way? Because if anybody should have been surprised, she should have been surprised, because she probably had very low expectations for you, because she knew you know, because she was getting beat herself, then she was beating you, and she knew that she was in this rut that she couldn't seem to get out of, that you would probably be in the rut. It's probably in her mind that she accepted that as a fact of life. But what was her reaction when she saw you getting out? Because I don't know if you're aware of it, but I was always told that if you put crabs in a barrel or a bucket or a bowl, and one of the crabs starts to come out, the other crabs will pull them back in. It's like they're saying, well, where do you think you're going, buddy? You know, if we can't get out of here, you're staying in here with us. You know, and it seems like when we want to get out of a situation, those closest to us are telling us that we can't do it. And that, you know, just stay here where you belong, you know. And it's not that they're being mean or anything. It's that they don't have faith that they can do it. And they understand that if you can do it, what's my excuse? And it forces them to look really deep at themselves. And a lot of them aren't willing to ask that question. So it's much easier to just pull you back in and, you know, beat you up. So do you think she ever realized that? Did she ever say that she was proud of you and stuff like that?
You know what, Dave, before I answer that question, I want to share something with you and your listeners. I always say everything happens for a reason. I have never heard that crab analogy, but last night, I believe, I have so many different thoughts in my head. I have ADHD on crack. Last night, I think on my radio show, I was interviewing a lady. My radio show airs Monday nights. I was interviewing a lady. I think she used that same analogy, or somebody yesterday used that same exact analogy that you just used, and I had never heard it before. That's crazy.
Wow.
That's blowing my mind.
Well, but that just proves it's true. And if you don't believe me, get a bunch of crabs, stick them in there, and watch what happens when one tries to get out.
Yeah, well, it's very true. I mean, it's a social dynamic of human behavior. It's like, oh, well, if you're going to get up there, if you get up, then that makes me look like I'm lazy and I'm bad, so I'm going to pull you down. That way misery loves company. I could go on a whole tangent with that.
That's right. You have a master's in organizational behavior. You know all this stuff.
Yeah, I'm just really good at with personal development and people. But to answer your question, Dave, she did. She finally. I had to beg her. Just to let you backstory, I had to beg her to come to every single graduation I had. I had to beg her to come to my associate degree graduation. I had to beg her to come to my bachelor's degree graduation. I had to threaten her to come to my master's degree graduation. I actually threatened her. I said, "Listen, I will never help you again. I was going to cut the ties." She's like, "Oh, I have to go to work." I'm like, "I'm getting a master's degree. I put myself through school." And she showed up. I had to threaten her to come to my first wedding, who actually I married that Tammy lady, by the way, and we got divorced, and we're still awesome friends because I believe in not ruining relationships. I believe in, you know, things end, but they don't have to be mean. But she acknowledged that she loved me and she was proud of me 3 weeks before she died.
Wow. Why do we wait till it's so late to share that, you know? And she was just acting like a crab, in case you were wondering, because, you know, she would have to look at herself and say, "My gosh, my own son is getting out of here. What's my excuse?" And she wasn't willing to ask that question to herself. So don't take it personal. She was really damaged. She was really damaged. And and I'm glad that she was able to see you better yourself, because that's what every parent wants for their children. And unfortunately, we should do it without spoiling them. You know, we have a whole generation of baby boomers who, after everybody came back from the war, they just spoil the whole generation too much. And that's why that's why we're in the mess we're in. And that's why they're spending more than they're making. And you know, it's like the entitlement generation. But that's another story. That's an order. You know, it reminds me of that story, and because since I hit 60 years old, I have these memory lapses, and I can't remember the name of this movie that was a Broadway musical. It was just out a few months ago, and it was a story of in France, this man was in prison, and he served, you know, he stole something because his family was hungry, and he served 20 years hard time, and when they let him out, you know, he was on parole. And it's like they were just so hard on him. They were expecting him to fail, just like, you know, with you. People were expecting you to fail. But this man actually went to a place where priests live, and he stole all the guy's silver. and he got caught by the police. They brought him back, and he says, "We caught this man, and he's got all this stuff in here, and is this your stuff? Did he steal it?" And to the man's amazement, he says, "No, I gave him all this stuff. In fact, I'm glad you brought him back because he forgot to take some of it." And he just gave him more silver and more gold. And the man was blown away that he was shown such grace. And, of course, he later bettered his life with that money. And he had a daughter. Do you know the name of the movie? I'm driving myself crazy here.
I do not. I'm drawing a blank.
Well,
I figured I would get it, but I don't.
I know our audience does, and maybe I'll edit this and throw it in at that point. But such a classic story, and you know that's your story, really. So I'm so glad that your mother was able to share that with you, because that means a lot, you know.
It was an amazing moment.
We need affirmation from our parents, and if we don't get it, we become even more damaged. So we're going to take a break again, because this is a great interview. And, Chris, I'm so happy that you decided to and accepted my invitation to come on board and do this. So we'll be back in a couple of minutes, and see you soon.
Tune in to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver program, every Saturday at 3:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, only on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. The whole purpose of this show is to help support you in your caregiving responsibilities so that you take care of yourself first, so that you don't burn out, because your loved ones are counting on you to take care of them. And Dave Nassani should know. He's been a caregiver to his wife for over 19 years. After she suffered a debilitating stroke that left her severely speech-impaired and paralyzed on her right side. After a 2-year grieving period, she came to the realization that she had to play the cards that she was dealt. And so she decided to reinvent herself and attempt to do all the things that she was famous for doing before her stroke, like gourmet cooking, hosting dinner parties for 12, interior decorating, sewing, and too many other hobbies and activities to mention here. She now basically makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers by continuing to do almost everything she did before her stroke. But in essence, she does it with one arm and one leg tied behind her back, and she might as well have duct tape over her mouth too, since she can't speak. And she does it all with her amazing positive attitude and smile. So what's your excuse for not playing the cards that you were dealt and turning those lemons into lemonade? Dave has been so inspired by Charlene's attitude that it inspired him to reach out to caregivers by writing 3 books and starting this radio program to make sure that caregivers have a place to go to get the support that they need in order to avoid burnout and to get through the grief process. Now get ready to learn how you can avoid burnout and survive grief. It's Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network. And here again is your host, Dave Nassani.
Keep your head together. And we are back with Christopher Rausch, an amazing person who found himself having to be the caregiver to his mom. And he really struggled with it because she wasn't exactly the ideal candidate for someone who would want to give her care. So for the last 20 minutes of the show, Chris, I would really like you to go into what were you thinking when you found out that she needed a caregiver and, you know, you heard one voice say, "No way, she doesn't deserve me to care for her," and then the other voice saying, "Oh, but come on," you know. It's like there's a devil on one shoulder and an angel on the other shoulder, and you're both kind of having a fight talking to you. Because, you know, my audience is caregivers, and some of them might be doing what you did and caring for someone who maybe they're not very fond of, someone who doesn't deserve care, maybe an ex-spouse. And maybe some of these listening audience are contemplating doing it, and they're still in the struggling phase, you know, listening to this voice and listening to that voice. And maybe you can kind of help guide them in what motivated you to do it, and was it rewarding, and was it the best thing you ever did, and what would have been like if you just abandoned her, and, you know, just explore all of that stuff. Go ahead.
Sure, sure. Thanks, Dave. And I'm glad I get to tell this part of the story. A lot of people have asked me about my mom and my situation, and that's why I really wanted to be on your show to share this, because people have said, I can't believe you went back and you helped her. And I'm going to do a very encapsulated what happened to her after the motel. The motel actually got mowed down. Actually, the 5 freeway here in Southern California runs right through where that motel was, and she stayed there. She was the last person in that motel because they of her cats. But she got a check for, I think, $8,000, relocation money. She actually bought a house out here in Southern California in Corona. She bought a 4-bedroom house with a pool, which is the thing she stuck with her whole life. She says, I want a house with a pool. And so she actually turned her life around for a long time. She got a job, and she was doing really good. And then, once again, she screwed it all up, had to come live in my garage for a while. I had to buy her a fifth-wheel trailer because she still had all the animals. And my life was kind of getting stabilized. Not having to take care of her as much. She was living in this trailer out in Hemet, which is an old person's town, I guess, if you want to call it. And I get a phone call from her one night telling me that she has to go to the hospital. And I'm like, well, what did you do? And my mom was always about her. I want it now. I want it my way. I don't care what inconvenience it does to you. And so she says, I have to go to the hospital. I said, what'd you do? She goes, I was drunk, and I was brushing the dog, and the dog bit me. My hand's been bleeding for 3 days. It's infected, and I don't know what to do. And I was like, seriously? I got to come take you because I was so, so angry, Dave. I mean, I'm not even going to lie. I was so mad. I was like, you stupid woman. And so I go down there. I have to drive. It's about an hour drive to get there, and her hand is messed up. It's swollen. And, you know, she's like, well, I need you to take care of the animals first, and I need you to do this, and I need you to do that. No, I need more cigarettes. And I'm like, what? What? Are you kidding me? You idiot. I mean, it was horrible. But that was the start of the downturn. Took her to the hospital. She wouldn't tell them she got bit because, you know, to tell them that you got bit, then the animal control are going to come out. And she had about 14 cats living in this trailer. So that was the start of it. And then through that process, you know, they were running tests on her, and they're like, hey, you know, it seems like there's something wrong with the circulation. So then they found out she has atherosclerosis, which is hardening of the arteries. So they found out, hey, your carotid artery in your neck is pretty much blocked, and if you don't take care of that, you're going to wind up having a stroke and you might die. So then we started going to the hospital. So I was helping her take care of her animals because her hand was her right hand, her predominant hand, was bandaged. She had to go have it clean and all sorts of stuff. So then I was driving to her place pretty much every day to help her take care of her cats again. This is, you know, 15 years later after the other motel.
Were you married at the time?
I was dating my current wife, yeah. Mm. And
So it's kind of interrupting your life.
Oh, big time. Oh, her living in my garage for 2 months was almost drove my girlfriend away. But I had to get tough with her. So then she had to, in the interest of time, I'll go fast. She had to have 2 carotid endarterectomies, which is basically getting the carotid artery fixed. Then they found out she had atherosclerosis in her right leg, so she had to do 2 femoral bypasses in the hospital. And she was in the hospital. She was in the hospital for days and days and days. I was going to work in Orange County, which is about an hour and a half drive to work. After work, I was driving to Hemet, which is about a 2.5-hour drive, to take care of her animals and walk her dog. Then I was driving to the hospital to see her and to make sure she was getting taken care of because she was being a bitch to everybody, so she wasn't getting her pain medication because nobody obviously wanted to help her. Key indication about people. Make people feel special and they'll take care of you. That's just a side note. So then we wound up in another hospital where her leg was getting worse and worse and worse. Point where she looked like she had gangrene. It was really bad. She had to have her leg amputated, so I had to take her to UCI Medical Center. We had to get that done. That was a pain. Still, while I'm taking care of all the animals and still making the drive and doing all this other stuff, I was mad, Dave. I was very mad because I'll tell you something. When I was a kid, and for all you people out there listening, when I was a kid, I used to beg her not to smoke cigarettes. I used to beg her, and she would say, "It's not your body. I can do whatever I want." And this is a thing that will piss me off so bad because I used to think, "Well, it's your body, whatever." She smoked, so it screwed up her body. It screwed up my life with 2.5 years of in and out of hospitals, in and out of convalescent hospitals. I had to find homes for her cats, which I didn't really find homes. I had to take them to a shelter and pray that they weren't euthanized, but I'm sure they were. I had to take 14 cats to this one animal shelter. That was a mess. I got cat scratch fever. I got messed up. Ultimately, I had to sell the trailer. I had to pay $7,000 to sell that trailer because it was so messed up. That was money I had saved up for my classic car, my 69 Charger I was supposed to restore. And it was in and out of convalescent hospitals, in and out of hospitals. And all the while, up until that third week before she died, where are my cigarettes? Where's my food? Where's this? What'd you do with my animals? You got rid of my animals. It was still the same stuff. And I was like, why am I doing this? Why can't I just walk away from this woman and tell her to go get bent? And the reason why, which is part of your question, the reason why, Dave, it's not right. Out of all the things my mom taught me and all the different things we had going on, there were good times. I mean, I don't want to paint her out to be a totally, totally bad person. She tried and she did the best of what she could. And I understand how psychologically we get stunted as kids. We mature physically and we look like we're older, but there's a certain aspect of our brain sometimes that gets stunted at a point. And her parents got divorced when she was 4 years old and her mother beat her. But it was, I did it because I knew right from wrong. And I knew and I believed, I guess in my heart, that if I was in that situation, I would want somebody to take care of me. And maybe I didn't know what I could do. Maybe I needed medication. Maybe I needed, you know, shock therapy or whatever it was. And I just hung in there, and it just became a job. It was like, okay, this is the new normal. I have to drive 200 miles a day. There was one night I went to see her at the hospital. I got home at 11:30. I barely laid down, and I got a call from the hospital saying her blood pressure crashed. I had to drive an hour back to the hospital. I had to sign an authorization for them to do an A-line, or they had to basically stab her chest and go straight into her chest. I had to sign a paper for that. But I did it because it was the right thing to do. And I loved my mom. It wasn't ever a mother-son, like, woo-hoo, you know, we're mother and son. It was like we were partners in crime, and then we were friends. We were friends for a long time while she had her house. We went to concerts, and we became friends. But then it was just like the cycle that happens, and your audience knows this, that all of a sudden you go from being the kid to being the parent. Oh, I was a parent from the time I was 13 until 3 years ago. And I'm glad I did it. I don't understand how I did it, honestly. I was driving under the influence because I would go to her trailer and I would have a couple of drinks just to be able to deal with all the cat stuff. And I was on zombie mode, but it was all worth it at that third week when we had her over to the house. And that's a whole other thing I had to do. but she had me over to the house and she goes, I'm really proud of you. Thank you. And she goes, it was her birthday. And she goes, this is the best birthday ever. And I said, why? And she never really liked my wife as much because it deferred attention from her. And she goes, because you and Barbara made me feel special and you picked me up and you got me my movie. I had to illegally down a movie because she wanted to see it. She always wanted cartoons. She was a kid in her brain. Very intelligent woman. Brilliant. I mean, she could have been a doctor. She was a brilliant woman. And I was like, wow. She didn't ask about her cats. She didn't blame me for anything. She was just happy that I was there taking care of her. She said she was proud of me. And I was, like, blown away. I was like, wow, and I'm so glad that happened. And I was glad that I was with her up until the end.
Wow. So what advice, Chris, would you give to others who maybe haven't made the decision yet? Maybe their mother is 100 times worse than yours and is there anything, let me ask you this first, is there anything that you would have done differently? Because you admitted that you have codependency considerations, and, you know, maybe when you went there, you should have just, you know, done the tough love thing and says, Mom, the cats are going into a shelter now. I can barely take care of you. You know, just kind of laid the law down because it's, Mom, this isn't about you anymore. I mean, would you have done anything differently as far as, you know, being a little more tough love in the beginning as opposed to wait until you were burned out? Because it sure sounds like you were burned out to me.
Oh, I was toast. And I can handle a lot. I can handle a lot. I tell people, what doesn't kill me makes me stronger, and I'm pretty darn strong. You know, I have two goals in life, Dave, and one of them is to stay out of a hospital after what I've seen. I just don't. Although I just had a procedure last week, as you know, so that was in the hospital. But and to die without any regrets. And the one regret I do selfishly have is that when she got that trailer, she got, I think, $26,000 from the house. We had to actually short sell the house, like, in the last minute. We got kicked out at midnight by the sheriffs, and that was another ordeal. I wish I would have taken that money and paid cash for that trailer, because I had to come up with $7,000 of my own to pay for that trailer. But honestly, I didn't have the guts. I guess, I mean, as
to
kids,
to confront her,
want,
you mean?
Yeah, I mean, I did, but I think as kids, we always want our parents' approval. We want our parents to love us. I mean, my wife is an excellent example. Her dad died young, and she still has all the agreements in her brain about what her dad has said about her. And so we want those. We want our parents to say, I love you. You're more than enough. Please take, please, you know, get rid of the animals and take care of yourself. And I always wanted her to say that, and she never did. And that's, it pushed me to the end, because I'm like, okay, how can I keep everybody happy? How can I keep my wife happy? How can I keep myself happy? I mean, well, I was last on the list. I think everything, again, it happens for a reason, Dave. And it's, you know, people say, don't you wish you had a normal childhood? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, because it's made me the man I am here right now talking to you, and I'm happy. And I wasn't going to, when I got the phone call from the nursing home saying that she wasn't going to probably make it through the night, I said, we were actually moving the next day. It was a crazy, crazy time. It was actually July 31st when she passed away. It was 3 years. And my wife says, we have to go there. And I said, no, she's probably already dead. I don't want to see it. I don't want to be there. And my wife told me, she goes, well, let's go. And I went there, and my mom and I were never huggy, touchy, feely, kissy kind of people. And I laid on the bed, and I caressed her face, which I never did. And I held her hand, and her hand was cold. And I just told her, Mom, it's okay. Mom, just go. I've got your dog. The dog was the one thing she told me to keep, which I still have. And I said, Mom, it's okay. Let go. You do not have to fight anymore. I've got this. Barb will take care of me. I'll be good. Just go. Let go. You don't need to fight. She could barely breathe. She had lung cancer. And, you know, she ultimately went about 1:30. Actually, she died about 1:25 in the morning. And I want to tell this part because this is amazing. She finally took her last breath, and I sat there. And I was like, wow, I was sad and I was relieved all at the same time, because I thought, I now get to live my life without the shadow of what phone call am I going to get next? Mm-hmm. What am I going to be told that, you know, now I get to be really first. And I walked outside of the nursing home, and it was about 1:35 in the morning, and I'm standing out there. I've got a Jack and Coke in a sippy cup, because that's how I'm dealing with the situation. And it starts pouring rain. It starts pouring rain. Southern California, July 31st, starts pouring rain. And I looked up to the sky, and at first I thought, well, crap, we got to move in 5 hours, and all my friends are coming over. But then, symbolically, I was like, her pain is released. She was always so tough, and she was always so strong, and wanted to be the smartest person, and wanted to be the know-it-all, and I was like, her pain is released, and this is a symbolic gesture of the pain being released, and I felt great. And actually, I just sat there in the rain and just got soaked.
Wow. I'm moved. So basically, to my caregiving audience, if you are faced with this situation where you need to care for somebody who maybe wasn't very nice to you, maybe an ex-spouse, maybe a parent, maybe an abusive parent. You know, I think of this, there's an evangelist called Joyce Meyer. Her father sexually molested her from 13 years old till 17 years old, and it just messed her up. But you know what? With God's help, she came through it, and now she has a worldwide ministry. And when her father died, she did the kind of the same thing. She went and took him into her home, and there was a point where he apologized for everything that he did, which is something that she's been waiting to hear for years and years and years. But you're right, Chris. It is the right thing to do. And one last word to our listening audience who is still contemplating what to do. How would you encourage them to do the right thing?
You got to look at it not from what your past is, but what's right for the moment and what you would want to happen for you. You know, we talked about karma. I strongly believe that what you put out there and what you do will come back. And you have to do it for the good of the human being because of, I tell people, if you walked in their footsteps, every footstep, and you had every experience that they did, you would probably be like that person. So you
yeah.
can't judge people for being different just based on the fact they went through different experiences. Do the right thing and feel good at the end of the day that you know that you don't go to the grave with the regret of that you didn't take care of somebody.
Absolutely. Chris, thank you so much for being on the show. It was a great show. You gave some great advice, and your story is amazing. And if somebody wanted
You're
to
welcome.
Get in touch with you to find out how they can be a kick-ass, what is your website?
Absolutely, Dave. And thank you so much for having me on. I really, really appreciate it. I'm glad I got an opportunity to share this part of my story. I can't thank you enough. It's been a true blessing. People can get a hold of me just at going to ChristopherRausch.com. It's R-A-U-S-C-H, ChristopherRausch.com. All my social media there is. My phone number is there. Connect with me. I would love to hear your story. I'd love to be able to help you go through situations like that. And, you know, just listen. I love to help people and talk and have a good time. And I would love to connect with you there and let me know that you heard me here on Dave's show.
Great. And you coach also, and you have a radio program.
Absolutely.
So you help people do what in your coaching?
My tagline is I help them overcome their self-created crap without the self-help fluffy BS. I get people just to really overcome their fear and their procrastination and become authentically self-confident. I was a suit and tie speaker, and now I've got bandana and jeans, and I love who I am. I'm just me, and I help people achieve that. And then on my radio show, it's called The Kick-Ass Radio Show, thekickassradioshow.com, and you know, I just interview a person every week, and they share 5 kick-ass tips that you can use for your personal or professional success. And you're going to be on my show.
Yeah, cool. And that's Monday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Yep, absolutely.
Or they can go to your website and listen to the podcast.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, thank you again. And to my audience, thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you coming and joining this time with us every Wednesday at noon. And we will see you next Wednesday at noon. And we do rebroadcast this on Saturdays at 3:30. That's all Pacific Standard Time. Thank you. God bless you. And thank you, Chris. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern, to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process, right here on the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network.